Okay, hello everyone, and welcome to Red Ice Radio. Thank you for tuning in to bbsradio.com. This is Henrik Palmgren, and I'm coming to you live from the west coast of Sweden, and I will be your host for the following hour. Now, I'm very excited about today's show, because we'll be talking about the subjects that have intrigued me ever since I heard about it back in 2000 or 2001 sometime. And this is about HARP, the strange antenna array up in Alaska. And we have no other than Jerry E. Smith joining us today. And Jerry has been a writer, editor, and activist for over three decades. In the early 1990s, he was the executive director to the National UFO Museum in Reno, Nevada. His biography of published works includes scores of articles and reviews, over a dozen ghost-written books, and two nonfiction works from Adventures Unlimited Press, HARP, the Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy, which we'll be discussing today, and Secrets of the Holy Lands, the Spear of Destiny in History and Legend. And I also want to mention that Jerry was very kind to send me a copy of his book, HARP, the Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy, and I've been browsing through the book throughout the week here, and it is indeed fascinating research. And one thing I really like about the book is not that it doesn't only describe the background and the conception of HARP, but also leaves plenty of room for discussion on many of the possible uses of this strange and mysterious facility. So before we bring Jerry on, I also want to mention that if you want to know more about Jerry, his other projects, books, or want more information about him, you can just pop on over to his website, which is jerryesmith.com. That's jerryesmith.com. And okay, so let's bring our guest on. Welcome to the program, Jerry, and thank you very much for taking the time to be here.
Well, hi. Thank you for having me.
Great. Great to have you here. You know, as I stated in the introduction there, I've been intrigued by HARP ever since I read about it back in 2000 or 2001 sometime, and I guess that most people tuning into this program or who regularly visit my Red Ice website are at least familiar with HARP, heard about it in some sense, but we don't want to leave anyone behind, so to speak. So to start things off here, Jerry, for those who never before have heard about HARP, maybe you can give a basic outline of what it is.
Certainly. HARP is the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program. It is a field of antennas in southeastern Alaska. At this point, they just finished, after 15 years of working on it, they just finished constructing it this year. So we have, even though the project has been ongoing since about 1990, we still haven't really seen what it can do. We've only seen what the tests of it have indicated it might be able to do, which is quite a bit, which I'm sure we'll get into in a moment. The field of antennas is 180 towers, each 72 feet tall, arranged in a grid. On top of each tower is two cross-dipole antennas, making an X horizontal to the ground, 72 feet up. These antenna elements are all linked together to work as one giant broadcasting antenna. The one antenna has, at this point, an effective radiated power of 3.6 million watts. This is by far the world's largest radio broadcasting station. But it's not designed to broadcast for human ears. It's designed to inject this energy into the upper, into the very top of the atmosphere in a region called the ionosphere. This is called this injecting this energy. First of all, HARP uses a unique patented system for firing the antenna elements so as to focus the energy coming out of the antenna. With other antennas, the energy dissipates in a cone, going away from the antenna, with the energy becoming weaker as the cone dissipates. Well, the inventor of HARP, Dr. Bernard Eastland, figured out a way to turn the cone upside down and put the broad side of the cone on the ground at the antenna field and the point up in the sky, the reverse of how a normal antenna works. The evidence that his technology is in use is that the project has changed hands. The patents that the project is based on has changed hands several times, and whoever has the patent has automatically got the contract, proving that the project is in fact based on that proprietary patented technology.
Interesting. And before, as you said there, we certainly will be discussing the new the build out here that has been completed. But before we do that, I would like to ask you, how did you become involved in the research of HARP?
Well, there were a number of things. First of all, my best friend was Jim Keith. Jim Keith wrote about a dozen great conspiracy and alternative history books, Black Helicopters Over America, Strike Force for the New World Order, Mind Control, World Control, the Encyclopedia of Mind Control, and a dozen others. And he and I had known each other from high school. We've been best friends since 1966 until his untimely death in 1999. And after he'd had a number of books out, one of his publishers called him and said, "Hey, Jim, right now HARP is the hottest thing on the internet. Can you write me a book on HARP?" And Jim's response was, "Well, no. I've got four books under contract, and I can't take on any more. But I got a friend." And so Jim set me up with Ron Bonds, the publisher of Black Helicopters. Ron and Jim both died under suspicious circumstances about a year apart. I wrote a first draft for HARP in 1996, and Ron hated it and canceled the project. And I ended up sitting on the manuscript for a year, and then I remembered David Hector Childress at Adventures Unlimited Press. And it turned out David was looking for a book on HARP, and when I called him and said I had one, he practically leaped through the phone to get it and shot me back a check without having read word one on the subject.
Okay.
Now, I had been researching a number of things with Jim, and so this I just finished writing my first nonfiction book, which has yet to be published, which was titled "Toppling the Pyramid: A Practical Guide to Overthrowing the New World Order." And so I had been researching globalist agendas and what I call the control freaks, who do not believe that humans are capable of self-guided freedom, and that they need to control us. And after researching them at great length and writing a book that I still haven't published, I really knew an area of stuff. And I'm not technical. My HARP book is not a technical book. My HARP book is not about how it works. My book is about the politics, is the global agendas behind the project. It's about why it works, not how.
Yeah. So maybe this next question might not be the best then, I guess, but nonetheless, I would like to ask it. There must be an official explanation for what HARP is being used for. Do you have any information on that?
Oh, absolutely. That's actually one of my favorite questions.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to follow along in your hymnal, I'm going to quote from my book, HARP, The Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy, page 24. At the bottom of the page, I have a quote from a very early document on HARP. This document came out somewhere between 90 and 94, and it was published by the Department of Defense, and it reads, quote, "The heart of the program..." Oh, wait a minute. Before I read this, I got to give you a couple of definitions so the quote makes sense. First of all, HARP is a kind of a device called an ionospheric heater. Ionospheric heaters have been in use since the 1970s to probe the upper atmosphere. And the way they work is they are radio stations that inject radio frequency energy into the atmosphere and keep the atmosphere up. HARP does exactly that, and with 3.6 billion watts focused into a spot that will be about 12 miles across by about 2.5 miles deep by 50 or 90 miles up, depending on which mode they're using it in. This will heat the ionosphere by thousands of degrees. When it does this, it literally blows the molecules of the atmosphere apart. This is called, oddly enough, ionospheric enhancement. You have to love the military. Only they would think that breaking something makes it better. So what they've found is that when you heat the ionosphere, you can make it do things. One is by literally blowing the molecules of the atmosphere apart. That gives off a scream of ELF, extremely low frequency radio waves, which penetrate deep into the earth and deep into the sea, which can be used for a variety of communications and surveillance technologies. So here the quote is, "The heart of the program will be the development of a unique ionospheric heating capability to conduct the pioneering experiments required to adequately assess the potential for exploiting ionospheric enhancement technology for Department of Defense purposes." Now I ask you, what are Department of Defense purposes? They are to win wars. It's literally to break things, bring the enemy to his knees, if you will. So the purpose of HARP is to conduct the raw experiments necessary to find out if ionospheric enhancement technology can be used to support DOD purposes, which quite frankly means, can they weaponize the atmosphere? Now, the project started about 1990, and I'm getting to what it's being used now for, and what they admit to it has been used in the last few years to do. The project started in the 1990s, and it went through a number of changes. They got up a few of the towers and antennas, and they wired them up to see basically if the stuff they bought worked, if they were buying the right stuff. It worked, so they put up more towers and wired them up to see if the field would output radio waves the way they thought it would, and that worked too. So then they put up, I think it was a field of 48 towers. And they've been working with 48 towers with a combined output of 960 kilowatts from about 1996 to last year. Now, and with the incoming Bush administration, the Bush Jr., George W. Bush, he came in 2000 with a somewhat different agenda, and he pulled the funding on HARP. For the next couple of years, HARP had no money. They were getting nothing done. So anything you hear about HARP doing this, that, or the other thing between 2000 and 2002 probably is wrong. HARP did not get refunded until 2002. And what happened was initially HARP had begun as a project jointly managed by the U.S. Air Force and the U.S. Navy, with the work on the ground being done by students and professors from the University of Alaska. In 2002, the Air Force and Navy gave management of HARP to DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Administration. And DARPA is the top of the military industrial research heap. To give you an idea of what DARPA is like, if you remember the James Bond movies, you may remember Q, the old guy who made all the crazy gadgets for Bond.
Yeah, sure.
Imagine, if you will, Q has tens of thousands of employees and billions of dollars in budget to play with. That's DARPA. Okay. Now, DARPA has a website. It's DARPA.mil. If you go to darpa.mil, you will the you will get a front page that explains what DARPA is about. At the top of the page, there are some tabs. If you click on offices, it will take you to a list of all the offices. There are 8 offices within DARPA. One of them is the Tactical Technology Office, the TTO. If you click on TTO, it will take you to the TTO webpage. Now, the Tactical Technology Office engages in high-risk, high-payoff, advanced technology development of military systems, emphasizing the system and subsystem approach to the development of aerospace systems and tactical multipliers. That's very important. HARP is a tactical multiplier. A tactical multiplier is not a weapon per se. It's something that will help your forces be more effective, such as if you want to sneak up on your enemy, if you could take out their spy satellites, that would be a tactical multiplier. That's what HARP is. If you look on the left of the TTO webpage, you'll see there's a menu, and one of the things is programs. If you click on programs, it will take you to a page with a list of all the programs that the TTO is engaged in, or all the ones they're willing to admit anyhow. And about an inch down, you see HARP, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program. If you click on that, you will get a page describing what they are doing with HARP. And this page is very unusual in that this page went up around 2002, 2003, and has been changed a little bit over the years. But as of March of this year, it changed rather drastically, because from 2002 to 2006, they kept saying what they're going to do with HARP. As of March 9th this year, it's now stated as what they have done with HARP. Under program plans, it used to say that they're going to complete the HARP project. Now it says, quote, completed the HARP high-frequency transmitting array at the HARP Research Station, Kokona, Alaska. Prepared the existing facility in preparation for ionospheric testing. Conducted advanced ionosphere and radio science research and analysis of applications, including space-based asset protection and phenomena related to its implementation. Now, what exactly does that mean? What exactly did they do? And right about the middle of that page, it lists 4 things that they have done with HARP. Now, this is what DARPA has done with HARP since 2002. And the first thing is the generation of extremely low-frequency, very low-frequency radio waves for submarine and other subsurface communication. That was what the Navy came in on the project for. And the official HARP website put up by the University of Alaska has always downplayed that and made it seem like, well, this is for talking to submarines under the Arctic Ocean, under the Arctic ice, and it's no big deal, and it's a very minor piece of what we're doing. And yet DARPA says that's number one. That's the primary thing we did with it. Second of all, the reduction of charged particle populations in the radiation belts to ensure safe spacecraft systems operations. This is an amazing thing. If true, it could be both really, really good and really, really bad. You may know that the Earth is surrounded by radiation belts called the Van Allen belts, because Van Allen, quote-unquote, discovered them. He discovered them by setting off nuclear weapons in them to prove that his guess that they existed was right. And he was right, and he did beef them up tremendously. Apparently, we went from having 3 to having 7, or went from having 5 to having 12, something like that, thanks to his work. Well, ever since discovered, we have had this problem with anything that's going out into space has got to go through at least the inner Van Allen belts, and to put up geosynchronous, they've got to go through the outer Van Allen belts too, which means that spacecraft going up or down have to go through these radiation zones, which are dangerous to both electronics and humans alike. And so HARP is being used to reduce the level of radiation in the belts. This could be just an absolutely wonderful thing that the whole world could use. The problem is, how are they doing it? And what they're doing is they're injecting extra energy into the belts, injecting extra particles, energetic particles into the belts to try and overbalance, to put in more than it can hold, so as to cause precipitation, so as to cause the particles to fall out. Now, there's a lot of potential downsides to this, because when the particles fall out, where do they go? They come to Earth. So we're getting hard radiation from the Van Allen belts dropping into the top of the atmosphere. And there has been no good science done on what happens to them from there. It certainly has not been reported in any of the scientific literature associated with the HAARP project. You have to go digging a lot of other projects to find what they think happens. And this causes a cascade effect. And the particles come into the top of the atmosphere, which precipitate events, which then drop and precipitate more events, which drop and precipitate more events. And you can get things like widespread power outages and changes in weather patterns by doing this. The other thing is, if they try to beef up the belts to force the precipitation and fail to force the precipitation, all they have done is made the belts more dangerous to pass through. And we know from independent researchers that when the Space Shuttle Columbia broke up, HAARP had been up and running in this mode for an hour before the reentry attempt.
Oh, really?
And is it possible that the unthinkable happened, and that HAARP, instead of making it safer for the Columbia to reenter, actually participated in its destruction? Now, of course, we're not going to get any affirmative answer on that subject out of the government. So it's very hard to say exactly what happened in that regard, but it's certainly a question that should be looked into. The next thing they said they've done with this thing is the control of electron density gradients and the reflective properties in selected regions of the ionosphere to create radio wave propagation channels. Now, what this means is that they have found that when you inject all this energy into what seems to be a chaotic system, you discover that the chaotic system actually runs on rules, and that you can actually force the atmosphere into shapes. This amount of energy actually forces the energy into the atmosphere, actually forces the air to make tunnels, literal tunnels. The molecules line up and create these gradients, these bounce spots, so that they can generate tubes, tunnels, what are called waveguides, to run radio waves down, so that radio signals that would only go a short distance go a great distance, and they go in a specific way, so that they can use these again for a number of surveillance and communications applications. And then lastly, they said that they used it to generate optical and infrared emissions in space to calibrate space sensors. And this one, this is a big question mark for me. How do they generate optical and infrared emissions in space? It seems to me there has to be some sort of something there, and they're not doing that in the void. They must be doing it in something, but that something is the atmosphere, so it's not space. So it's like I'm still scratching my head literally on that one, trying to figure out what the heck they're talking about. But it does leave some interesting possibilities that these are optical. These are things that can be seen with the naked eye. This is painting the sky, creating artificial auroras or somethings in the sky. This leads one to wonder if perhaps they aren't really trying to do Operation Bluebeam, which
that was one of my questions, actually. So go ahead.
Operation Bluebeam supposedly is this plan to create a world government by faking either the rapture or the second coming or an alien invasion or the whole lot. And to do this, you need a number of very specific technologies, which when the Bluebeam when the stories about Project Bluebeam first surfaced, everyone was going, no, they don't have this technology, they can't do this. But now we have the HAARP, it has the ability to literally paint the sky and make optical things. As I was finishing up the manuscript on the book HAARP, The Ultimate Weapon, The Conspiracy, just days before I mailed the manuscript off, I happened to be sitting in front of the TV, and a CNN news blip came on that just floored me. CNN announced that the Secretary of the Air Force had just announced at a press conference that the Air Force had perfected battlefield holographic projectors to project images in the sky over battlefields so as to frighten or disorient enemy troops. Now, that's 1996 technology. Where have we gone? Where have they gone in the last 10 years?
Fascinating. My God. So let's dive into some of the, you know, more of your theories and more of the potential uses here, because there's a lot of speculation, and to get the ball rolling, so to speak, last year there was a horrendous hurricane season, and I've heard and read several articles that speculate that there was some kind of weather manipulation involved. What's your take on this?
You know, I wish I had a good answer to that question, and the reason I don't have a good answer to that question is because I'm actually writing a book on that subject right now, and I'm still in the middle of my research. The way I work is I'm very methodical. I do not come to conclusions until the evidence is absolutely overwhelming, and so I'm still assembling evidence on this subject. I have interviewed a large number of people, such as Scott Stevens, who is an Idaho TV weatherman who became convinced that he could see the application of weather technology in his daily forecast. In fact, he actually became famous for being the most successful, the most accurate TV forecaster, because he simply threw out the National Weather Service forecast and built his own forecast based on seeing what he called scalar technology in use. And the evidence of scalar technology is really hard for I think there are probably about a dozen people on the planet who actually understand it. What the story goes and is in the middle of the 1800s, there was a brilliant mathematician, electrical theorist, James Clerk Maxwell. And James Clerk Maxwell worked out what are today known as Maxwell's equations, and they are the basis of electrical theory in modern science. And he wrote them in the style of math, in the kind of math that was popular in his day, but which is no longer used. This was quaternion math. In the 20th century, everybody shifted to tensor math. So about 1900, Oliver Heaviside, who is distinguished for having discovered the ionosphere, and Heinrich Hertz, for whom the cycles per second is named, such as in Hertzian waves, Hertz, you know, kilohertz, megahertz, etc. Together, they translated James Clerk Maxwell's work from quaternion into tensor math. And according to Colonel Tom Bearden and a few others, they buggered it. They got it wrong. That they did not successfully make the translation. But theirs has been the standard translation used since. Now, according to according to Bearden, there was another guy named Whitaker who developed a number of hyperdimensional theories based on Maxwell's original quaternion work and published at the turn of the century. You know, the 1904 was one of the most amazing years in science. That's when Niels Bohr won the Nobel Prize for proving that light was both a wave and a particle. And inadvertently proving that the universe seems to be conscious. If you're interested in that, check out the two-slot experiment, which seems to demonstrate that photons know what's going on.
Yeah.
So the same year was the year that Whitaker published his hyperdimensional materials based on James Clerk Maxwell. Well, according to Bearden, the U.S. ignored Whitaker and built on Oliver Heaviside's buggered translations, and then went with Einstein, and Einstein did not understand or agree with Maxwell and Whitaker. So our whole system of how we think of as physics is based on a buggered version of James Clerk Maxwell. Well, Bearden says that the Russians around 1950, once they realized that we had technical superiority in terms of nuclear weapons, they decided to go back to the drawing boards and try to come up with something entirely new and different. And they went back to the original Maxwell quaternion and discovered that there was a whole world of physics that we simply do not get taught in Western colleges, that there's a whole other physics out there. And that based on that whole other physics, they developed what Whitaker described as scalar technology. And that scalar technology is the ability to use electromagnetics at great distance. And that's what Scott Stevens was saying that he could see in the sky, and what may have been used to move Hurricane Katrina around and so forth.
Ah, okay, I see. This, of course, reminds me of some of the work of Nikola Tesla, and I've noticed that you go into some of his research. What's the connection here between all these different topics?
Well, Tesla has a number of aspects. One, Tesla was just an incredibly fascinating, amazing person. He's probably the greatest genius of his generation. And he was not only a great genius, but a scientific outsider. He did his work completely outside the mainstream of academic science, and yet the world we live in is his world. Our world is powered by alternating current, AC. The 60-cycle power that comes through the walls in America that runs all the gadgets and gizmos, this world is the AC world, and yet of the 46 basic patents in AC power, Tesla holds 45 of them. Also, Tesla discovered radio. While Marconi is generally credited by the history books, it's something of a lie. What Marconi did is he stole radio from Tesla. A classic piece of industrial espionage. Marconi went to Tesla, begged him to let him work in his lab. Tesla lets this kid work in his lab. He works there for about 2 years, scribbles down everything he can, and then goes and starts his own lab, and claims to have invented radio, based entirely on Tesla's work. Tesla sued him in the United States Supreme Court and won, with the U.S. Supreme Court overturning Marconi's patent and claiming, agreeing that Marconi had pirated 14 of Tesla's patents. So HARP is a radio transmitter. It's radio, and that's pure Tesla. There are some aspects of this that seem very Tesla-like. Tesla had this bright idea of injecting radio frequency energy into the stratosphere to make the atmosphere glow over cities so we wouldn't need streetlights. I'm sure glad he didn't do that.
Me too. And of course, he was also trying to develop, as I know it, wireless, completely wireless energy.
Right.
And this is the, there is also a connection, I guess, to the classic, you know, supervillain theory of the mad scientist who develops a death ray.
Exactly.
And a beam weapon. Maybe talk a little bit about that.
Tesla did develop a number of similar devices, but he didn't get very far with developing them. A whisper campaign was started against him that took him out, starting about 1900, 1902, 1904, right in there. Tesla had set up a lab in Colorado Springs, Colorado, and he had discovered what he believed to be standing waves, or electrical standing waves around the Earth, and that he was convinced that if you injected energy into one node of the wave, you could pull it out at another. And he pump a tremendous amount of electrical energy into the ground in Colorado Springs and drew it out 25 miles away and lit 200 of Mr. Edison's largest lamps with it at the time. The problem was is that it had all kinds of side effects. When people in the town of Colorado Springs went to their tap water, when it went to turn on the taps, they got electric shocks. The horses got electric shocks through their iron horseshoes and bolted from their stables. In one of his experiments, he caused over 1,500 lightning strikes and blew out the power grid in three states.
There we go. And if according to the research that you've done, is there any way, I mentioned the death ray earlier there, and is there any way that this is a possibility now with the HARP as it currently has been built out?
Well, not that doesn't seem to be that. No. The way the death ray worked was basically it was a two-stage device in which first a path of ionization is created in the atmosphere, and then a charge of electricity is sent down the ionized pathway. He experimented with it in the 1930s or in the 1920s. The French played around with it in the 1930s. The Russians picked it up and played with it in the 1950s. And the U.S. Military played around with it in the 1970s. Everybody who played around with it found that it was simply more trouble than it was worth. A lot of these advanced weapon systems, while they may sound like a really cool idea on paper, you gotta look down the road to what happens when you actually have the thing built and you have a 19-year-old conscript running the controls on the thing. When you have, you know, when it actually gets into the jarhead's hands, what's going to happen then? And so a lot of wars that we had over the last century, a big piece of reason behind fighting the war was to have a test ground to test new weapon systems in. In Gulf War I, we pulled out all the stops. We sent in all the toys, all kinds of bizarre, amazing, less than lethal, non-conventional electromagnetic weapon was tried. And when we went into Gulf War II, they left all the toys. They left most of the toys at home. And the reason for this is because when they tested them in the field, they found they stepped on each other, that all these electromagnetic devices scrambled each other, and that there was a problem of using them together. You could use this one, or you could use that one, but you couldn't use them both. And so this has been a lot of problems have a lot of. A lot of these advanced technologies are simply not flown when it was put into the hands of a soldier. Like in Somalia, They had the Stick'em guns. Now the Stick'em guns it looks kind of like a flamethrower. It's a stick you have in your hand with a tube that goes to a backpack. The backpack is full of chemicals that get squirted out the tube and become glue. And it's a glue thrower. The problem is the backpack weighs about 90 pounds, and it only holds enough stuff for a continuous spray for about 45 seconds. Mm-hmm. So you got a GI standing there in a mob, gluing the mob down. Well, that's fine as long as nobody is armed. But they found in Somalia was the most highly armed place on the planet, that you couldn't just be standing there with a glue gun gluing a mob because they're shooting back at you. And they promptly put the glue guns back in their cases and put them back on the ship because they were just too damn dangerous to use. So this is what's happened to a lot of these advanced technologies, is that they sound good in the lab, but when you actually put a 19-year-old a frightened boy barely trained to use this thing in a real life situation, he doesn't want to use it. He'd much rather have his M16.
Yeah. So I guess we could say, if we are to discuss more possible uses of HAARP, that it leans towards some kind of either some kind of space weapons which connects with a Star Wars program, or towards some kind of mind control issue. Is there anything of this that you favor in front of the other, so to speak?
Well, when I got the go ahead on writing, when I first heard about HAARP, about 6 months before I was asked to write the book. Jim Keith and I had put together a circle of researchers working with us on a variety of projects. And in fact, the circle of researchers still meets every Saturday night at the Denny's on Nugget Avenue in Sparks, Nevada. Anybody who's listening who happens to find themselves in Sparks, Nevada, Saturday night around 6 o'clock, go to the Nugget Avenue Sparks, Nevada Denny's, and there will be in the back room. Well, our circle of researchers had gotten Nick Begich's book right as soon as it came off. I mean, our people all listened to Art Bell. Nick was on Art Bell. Nick's book, Dr. Nick Begich and Gene Manning wrote the first book about HAARP, Angels Don't Play This HAARP, Advances in Tesla Technology. That came out in 95, and I had heard about HAARP within weeks of that book coming out. So it was an intriguing thing, and the first thing that really struck me was that the purpose, the primary funded purpose, and this is amazing. Remember I gave you that list, the four things that DARPA says they've done with HAARP?
Yeah,
the primary thing that HAARP was funded by the United States Senate to do is not on this list. The United States Senate was convinced there was a new technology called Earth-penetrating tomography. Earth-penetrating tomography has been like CAT scanning the Earth or a dirt radar. Using either very, very low or very, very high frequency radio waves, most earth-penetrating tomography is done with microwaves, but they're also using ELF and VLF, extremely low and very low frequency waves. And HAARP is designed to create ELF by blowing apart the molecules of the atmosphere, which give off an ELF scream. And ELF penetrates deep in the Earth, deep into the sea, and these waves are so long they go all the way around the Earth. So the idea that the Senate got was that if you have the right guys with the right equipment, they could use this to monitor enemy underground bases for the manufacture and launch of weapons of mass destruction. And in 1993, the Senate held up funding of HAARP, saying you're not going to get any money until you make earth-penetrating tomography a central focus of the project. And the University of Alaska and Air Force and Navy agreed to do that, and they got refunded in 94. And as far as I can tell, they have yet to do it. Or That is, they have yet to admit to doing it. We do know that there are some modes that particularly generate the ELF, that there's a couple of different ways that they do this, a couple of different ways they use it, and that they went into this after September 11th. For after the horrific events of September 11th, the HAARP array was on full round-the-clock use for 30 days. And a number of independent researchers have concluded that they were using it in earth-penetrating tomography mode to try and map out the tunnel systems in Afghanistan where Osama bin Laden might have been hiding. This, again, is speculation. The government has never admitted to it one way or the other. I think it's very interesting that even though this project has been from the get funded to do this, they have yet to admit to doing it. So they're either not doing it in direct violation of congressional wishes, or they are doing it covertly. And it's probably more likely that they're actually doing it covertly.
Oh, okay. And is this, I guess we could say, you know, that there are multiple reasons for developing a facility and a technology like this. And
oh, I'm sorry. I spaced out. I'm still answering your question. Okay. The ELF. I finished up one piece of it, and I forgot. Oh, yeah. The ELF that is designed to bathe the world in ELF is at the same frequency that the human brain works at.
When I
realized that they were intending to bathe the entire world in known brain entrainment frequencies, I kind of freaked out. Because I had been studying mind control since 1976. I met Walter Bovaard in 1976 after his book Operation Mind Control came out, and I have been very carefully studying what the spooks have been doing with this, and there have been numerous mind control projects run by the United States government and by private psychiatrists off and on throughout the latter half of the 20th century. And one of the things we know is that the brain is a radio transceiver, that the human brain is affected by outside signals. If you go to Nick Begich's website, earthpulse.com, you'll see that he sells a bunch of these devices for access to deep-seated memory, brain boost devices, instant meditation, this sort of stuff. These devices exist and they are real because the brain does entrain. It does. It is affected by outside stimuli in which you can change the brain pattern to change your consciousness. And when I realized that HAARP was designed to do that, was to be a brain boost machine for the whole planet, I realized that if these guys did not know what they were doing, there are no biological scientists involved in the HAARP project, none. So they would have no clue what they were doing to humans. And if they were doing this unknowingly, they could inadvertently create mental dysfunction, headaches, road rage across half the planet without having a clue they were doing it. And if there were a covert ops side of the operation, if they did know what they were doing, this could be the ultimate mind control device, which is why the book is called HAARP, the Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy.
Yeah. And just as you said at the beginning of the program, you know, that DOD and DARPA has been developing. DARPA has been developing it, and DOD now owns it, I guess.
Right.
And,
it's on land owned by the Department of Defense. DARPA has completed its job. DARPA came in under an MOA, a Memorandum of Agreement, to kick the HAARP project into shape, to finish the build out. They have finished the build-out, and they're now giving it back to Air Force and Navy. And Air Force and Navy had all along wanted to do earth-penetrating tomography, communication with deeply submerged submarines, and a number of other facets.
Yeah. So, I mean, the question here, By the way, we've got just about 5 minutes left of the show here, but the question is, I guess, as you said, this is a military device, and it's there to gain more effective means of beating the enemy, so to speak. And the question is, who is the enemy?
Exactly. A lot of America's radical left and right will tell you that the enemy is the American public. The mainstream will tell you that the enemy are terrorists. But that's just the hobgoblin du jour.
Yeah. And what's your take on this? I mean, let's say they bring out, you know, a combination of all this, a Project Blue Beam scenario, and on top of that, some kind of the bathe the Earth in these ELF waves. So basically, everybody starts freaking out over this. I mean, is this a possibility that you see?
Absolutely. What I see is that this project has been treated like a redheaded stepchild for most of the last 15 years. It went for 2 years with zero funding. What I think is going on is that this is sort of a lost in the shuffle backdoor last piece of the Star Wars weapons program, the Strategic Defense Initiative, and
yeah.
That may or may not ever come to the attention of somebody big and bad who wants to use it. Right now, it's been drifting a bit. That said, it's now completed. Up until this time, it hadn't been used for much because it wasn't done. They hadn't finished building it yet. Now it's there. Now it's a finished device, and now we're going to start seeing what they're really going to do with it. As for who they are, that's a darn good question. The project began, I think, mostly as pork barrel. I think that it got pushed through the U.S. Senate because Ted Stevens, the senior senator from Alaska, wanted some more military funding funneled into Alaska, and it has had a rocky history, and I don't know, I'm babbling.
No, it's great, you know, and we have covered a lot of ground here, and we have about 2 minutes left of the show, so. I mean, is there anything that you would like to leave us with here?
Well, visit my website, jerryesmith.com. I have a lot of research on that website. Jerryesmith.com has got literally thousands of pages of data tucked away in it. And you can order an autographed copy of the book directly from the website. Or you can pick the book up, HAARP, The Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy, at any major bookstore in North America. Also, I believe it's pretty well available in the UK. There's also a Polish version of it, so anybody who's listening in Polish can pick up a Polish version of it. And it just came out in Portuguese in Brazil. In fact, I'm going to be speaking on HAARP in Brazil this coming October. So you can get it at Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble, BarnesandNoble.com, or at the publisher, AdventuresUnlimitedPress.com.
Great. And before we leave here, I would also like to mention that you will be a good friend of mine, Chris Morse, having the Creative Cosmos Radio Show. You'll be on there next Friday, I guess, June 9th.
That's correct. June 9th.
Yeah, speaking about your...
looks like it's 8 p.m. Pacific time.
Eight, that should be correct. The show is between 7 and 9 p.m. Pacific, so... And you'll be talking about your latest book, I guess, your latest finished book, Secrets of the Holy Lands.
Exactly. And yeah, I'm just finishing up the next book, which I see has just come up available on Amazon.com, and I haven't even finished writing that book yet, which is Weather Warfare, The Military's Plan to Draft Mother Nature. I expect to have to submit the manuscript here in about 6 weeks, and it should be on the stands ready for purchase around September.
Perfect, perfect. So everyone, make sure to visit JerryEsmith.com. And Jerry, thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
It has been great. And we'll finish off the interview right over here over the phones, okay?
Okay.
Thank you. We'll talk later, okay?
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, thank you everyone who has been tuning in today. This has been Red Ice Radio, and you have been listening to a very nice interview with Jerry Smith on the harp issue and the array there. So make sure you tune in next week, and we will be continuing the voyage. Okay, bye-bye.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others' endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning in to our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.